In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. Imagine with me that you go to a doctor, and you say, Doctor, I have this persistent cough. And then the doctor says, okay, no biggie, here, take this cough suppressant, see you later. What would you do? Wait a minute, what do you mean cough suppressant? I paid money for this. Right? No doctor in their right mind will do this, right? They're going to say, well, wait a minute, let's find out what the cause of the cough is. And see, maybe it's allergies, maybe it's flu, maybe it's cold, maybe it's emphysema, maybe it's COVID, maybe it's pneumonia, who knows? Okay? And the obvious logical thing is the doctor will not treat the cough at all. Because the cough is not a disease. It's a symptom. The cough the doctor will treat the symptom, and then as he or she treats the symptom, this cough will begin to dissipate and go away. So just remember this. But this whole process is called diagnosis. Okay, those in medical school are familiar with this tone. No, I'm kidding. So we're going to talk today a little bit about a diagnosis. When you think about a diagnosis, it involves just a few steps that would make up a full diagnosis. The first part is assessing what the symptoms are. This is what it always begins with. This is the first thing we notice. Okay? After determining the symptoms, then comes the part where we start figuring out the cause. And after we figure out the cause, then we can begin to work out a treatment plan between the diagnosis, the symptoms, the causes, and we start working on a treatment plan. And like I said, this treatment plan is for what? The symptoms or the causes? It's for the causes. We need to remember this. A lot of times people say they struggle with anger. And all their mind is, don't get angry, don't get angry. And they go to confession and they say, I keep getting angry. And like, I shouldn't be getting angry. And I'm confessing anger. And I tell them, anger is not a sin. Did you know that? Anger is not a sin. Bible says, be slow to anger. It didn't say, don't get angry. And it says, in your anger, do not sin. Anger is not a sin. Anger is an emotion. And all emotions are honest. All emotions, it's not a matter of right or wrong. All emotions indicate something real. So a lot of times instead of focusing on the don't get angry and wasting energy and we get so frustrated, we need to figure out the causes. The cause could very possibly be a sin. But I need to, if I work on the cause, then I'll find that the anger is dissipating just like the cough. Just to be more efficient in our repentance. A lot of people focus on treating symptoms and they're so frustrated. They're like, what's going on? I'm working so hard and I'm trying so hard with all my heart and I'm praying to God every day. You're working hard at the wrong thing, not the right thing. Then the treatment plan is basically the what and the how. What you need to do and how you need to do it. Okay? So, I kind of need to apologize to you because I think at the end of this talk, you're probably going to walk out with more questions than answers. And my goal is not to even pretend that I have the answers, but to maybe begin scratching the surface of some things that we need to focus on. First of all, let's start with this and look at the symptoms. If I were to ask you, what do you think of the condition of the world today? What would you say? I see your faces. You don't see your faces. But everybody's like, not good. Not good, Abuna, at all. And we're not talking physically. We're not talking environmentally. We're not talking medically. But we're talking humanly. The world is in a bad place right now. It kind of looks like this. A year ago, I was in the presence of a very high-ranking clergy member. And this person I incredibly admire and trust and respect a lot. And we were talking with a group of people. And if you know me, my memory is like shot. I don't remember anything. People love confessing with me because, you know, they'll say, remember when we talked to him, it's like, who are you? I don't even know. But that statement that he said stuck with me and it scared me because I still remember it to this day. This was a year ago. And he said that he thinks that, he said, I believe the devil has been loosed. Do you know what that is? The devil has been loosed? This is from Revelation. Okay, if you look at the book of Revelation 20, verse 1 to 3, This is near the end of Revelation 2. It says, "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, and he took hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. We'll talk some more. And then it says, after these things, he must be released for a short time. And then later on in the same chapter, in verses 7 and 8, it says, "When the 1,000 years are completed, Satan will be released from his prison and will come out to deceive the nations, which are at the four corners of the earth." I'm not an apocalyptic person. You know, I don't usually say, because we never know. I mean, even here it says a short time, so we don't know if that's going to be, you know, 10,000 years or 10 days or what. But I think if you look around you in all aspects of the world really, something is not right in a big way. And I'm not talking the same way that every generation looks at their kids and go, the world, something's wrong with the world, you know. No. And I'm not saying this out of arrogance. I think all generations are agreeing that what's happening today in this world is flat out weird. It's so rampant. Let's look at some of the symptoms and then you'll see what I mean. First of all, where is it? There it is. Okay. The LGBTQ culture agenda. If you step back a little bit and look at this one symptom, it's actually quite impressive how organized and methodical and intelligent and wise and shrewd these people are. It reminds me of the parable of the unfaithful steward who you know, the master told him, give an account of your stewardship, you're out of here. And then he went and told, how many do you owe? 100, okay, write 80. How many do you owe? Write 50. And he commended him, and he said that I don't remember it word for word, but the children of this world are wiser or more wise than the children of light, or the believers. That the intelligence, in a basically, I don't want to take too long, but in a very organized, methodical manner, it started some time ago. One of the older ways they started this is with the DSM book. The DSM stands for Diagnostics and Statistical Manual, and it's a book that psychiatrists have, and it has a list of all the psychological disorders. Okay, DSM 1, 2, and 3. Now I think we're at DSM 5 or 6, I don't remember, but the first two or three editions of this book had homosexuality as a psychological disorder. Sometimes it calls gender dysmorphia or like something. There's a disconnect in what your gender is. But lo and behold, in edition 3 or 4, it became called the lifestyle. And then after that, it's not even mentioned in there. You better not mention it. That's one thing. Another thing is introducing slightly in some of the shows, especially the really funny ones, maybe one character who was homosexual or trans or whatever, and this character was intentionally portrayed as a very nice, very sweet, very wise, very helpful person. And we're watching the show, you know, like, okay, it's a person in the show, no big deal, right? But look at the methodology, and we're talking in the last 30, 40 years only, okay? But with patience and intentionality. After that, it started with the bullying videos at schools. You remember that season where bullying was this big bad thing, and the kids, if they heard the word bullying, it's like, no, I'm not a bully, and all. And they changed I don't know how they did this, but they have lobbyists, they are very intelligent, and very, again, wise and shrewd and methodical, but they changed the bullying videos of school where, yes, there is a kid who is being bullied, but he is being bullied. Why? Because he's homosexual. And it makes you feel compassion. It makes the kids from a young age feel like, oh, haram, like, that's not right. And it's not right to bully the child because he is that. But this is, again, how just slowly but surely. It goes on to hijacking certain words and symbols, and I hate that. I hate that now whenever I look at a rainbow, me, an Orthodox priest, my mind goes to, oh, gay. Right? I bet you if you had a shirt that had a rainbow on it or socks or something in your room that had a rainbow on it, you probably got rid of it. Don't you hate that? They hijacked it. They took it. And words like pride and love and parade. After that, it went on to categorizing the LGBTQ community as an oppressed minority group. We're going to talk about that in the next symptom. And now, since they are an oppressed minority group, they need rights. So they started to fight for rights for partners to have insurance based on their partner's work. You know, why can't the heterosexual marriages have that? Are we not human? I mean, we're living together, we're life partners, so we should get it too. And a lot of those things, when they begin, you go like, what? What? All of them begin like this. But they keep at it, coming from this angle, coming from that angle. And then it passes and it becomes norm. Legalizing gay marriage, this happened just a few years ago. I had actually multiple young people who confessed with me who, lo and behold, 2 days after this came out of the blue, multiple kids came to me and said, Abuna, I think I'm gay. And then we have to talk about this and go, why do you feel that way? And like, this doesn't necessarily mean you're gay. And they're totally fine now, thank God. But it's just the effect of all this stuff. And then this one drives me bonkers, but I don't know about here in Houston, but in Austin, they're trying to pass this. They've been trying to do it for 2 years to pass teaching LGBTQ sex ed to fourth graders with graphics. We don't even teach them heterosexual stuff, but they tried to pass it and the parents objected, and then thank God COVID came so that everybody go home. And this year the parents objected again, but they keep at it. Every year they're going to keep adding it, and it will pass. Because that's where the world is heading. And it just goes on and on and on. It gets to a point where you get to see, and I'm sorry to share with you, but we need to know the symptoms. A person can be walking with a deadly disease and not know it. So we need to know what the symptoms are. There is now it's been out for several years, but an organization that's coming out called NAMBLA, which stands for the North American Man-Boy Love Association. I don't want to depress you, but I'm sorry, it's bad news. We're sick, so you got to hear the bad news. This is the beginning of waking us up so we can do something. And it goes on and on and on to other stuff like Animalia and like just going on and on, and there's like no stopping, and there's actually a book that describes this methodology. They're so blatant that they just wrote down their agenda and how it started, called After the Ball, and how just a few people who are very good at economics and marketing with a small budget, maybe $5,000 or something, started this wildfire, forest fire. Just for grins, as I was preparing for this, I noticed how, you know how the first church, the devil's like, okay, I'm going to end Christianity, let's kill all the Christians. And then it was like backfire, right? For every Christian he kills, another 10 rise up, right? So he's like, okay, this isn't working, so let's try a different method. By the way, the devil is not very creative. He keeps doing the same temptations, only packaged a little bit differently. And the same thing with this. When he tried to kill it, it wasn't working. So he's like, okay, with the first church, let's throw just a bunch of ideas, so that the truth gets lost in the mix. It's kind of like a school of fish or a school of birds. They do that to confuse predators so they don't know where to bite. And there are so many ideas out there and so many ideologies and philosophies that people are just, which one is the truth out of these dozens in our church? And I'm not talking teenagers. I'm talking people in their 20s and 30s and maybe more. But anyway, I was just going to say that just for grins, I wanted to get out there and see the number of, what do they call them, gender classifications or identification. What number are we up at now? You know, because that keeps going up, by the way. They keep discovering new ones. And it was like 54, 55. Starts anywhere from agender to something called two-spirit. I didn't look it up. These are all different genders that somebody can identify with. And it goes like to retreats and camps for the, anyway, I need to move on to symptom number two. I'm sorry. Symptom number two, critical theory. We're gonna have like a whole convention on this by itself. By the way, it's called critical theory, not critical race theory. Critical race theory is a part of critical theory, under the umbrella of critical theory. What do I say about critical theory? In a very, very simplified summary, critical theory says that anybody in the world belongs to one of two categories: an oppressor or oppressed. There's no third. You are either oppressed or you are an oppressor. And if you are in a majority, majority by number or majority by power, like if you're in a boss or a supervisor or a president of a company or something, you're in a majority. So it could be majority by influence. Okay? You're the oppressor. And if you're in the minority, you're oppressed. And we gotta do something about it. That's where it gets very interesting. The way they do it is that this does not, it's not just restricted to race. It has to do with race, color, gender, socioeconomic status, level of education, handicap or ability. If you're in any one of those, then you're in one of those categories. So the worst people on earth, the worst oppressors, is if you are a straight white man who has high degrees and is a supervisor at work or something, who is his body is whole. There's no handicaps. And you are the luckiest person on earth if you are a black or different color female who is not straight, one of those 55 genders, who happens to have a handicap and low level of education or socioeconomic status. And it's just, let me just tell you some more about it. The way critical theory started out, it started out in the 1930s, believe it or not, but some neo-Marxists, academicians in the Frankfurt School out in Germany after World War I. Okay, and then it was kind of spreading a little bit, but only in the universities, in the United States, and then only recently, in the last several years, it became mainstream, as a result of some, serious problems that we've had as far as here in our society. But it kind of became like wildfire, and it's spreading like wildfire. Like these are all the different categories that I mentioned. Also the level of education, what degrees you might have. And it's just the concept is sheer madness. For example, one of the books about critical theory that says, if you are white, you are an oppressor. Period. If you say, well, you know, I mean, I have many friends who are, you know, non-white. And I was like, the fact that you said that means you are racist. And they go, okay, I'm racist. How do I fix it? I don't want to be racist. You cannot fix it. You're a racist, you'll always be a racist. That's critical theory. It gets better. They teach that the concept of order and punctuality is a white masculine theory that's oppressive. They teach that teaching kids that 2 + 2 = 4 is a white supremacist masculine oppressive theory. The faces you're making right now, I've been like this now for like a year. Cause every time I'm like, what? I mean, you think it's a joke at first, but it just goes on and on and on. It's just really messed up. And their solution, that's another one. Olympians going to represent their country. And then when it's time to salute their flag, they turn their back. And that's a saluted thing. That's clapped for. That's like good for you. I know I'm going to get a lot of the fan mail in the next few days. But look at this. The solution is equity and retribution. In other words, revenge. It is totally okay and good for the oppressed person or group to do whatever, hit, steal, kill, break, do whatever. It is not only okay, it is good and applauded to do this stuff to bring up equity and retribution. And it kind of you begin to understand how can group A, who is mad about, you know, group B oppressing group C, how does it fix anything when they go and destroy group D? You know what I'm talking about? You go, okay, what did this help if there's a problem here with you go destroying the houses or businesses or killing other people because you're mad about somebody killing somebody else? Where's the logic? And there's no answers. And you go, okay, let's say this group is a majority and this group is a minority, so we need to do the equity. But now what if this group becomes a minority, the majority? No answers. Madness. There's no logic. I need to move on. Depression, another symptom. The funny thing is the richest and supposedly most educated countries are the highest in LGBTQ and critical theory and have the highest levels of depression and suicide. Going away from God, I mean, it's not going to be a surprise. That's another symptom. It just goes on. Apathy. Just absolute indifference. Nobody cares. Extreme selfishness going on in the world. I don't know if you've dealt with people who are like that, or if maybe you're beginning to struggle from suffering. There's no more chivalry. There's no more standing up for somebody at the bus. I recall a graduate college student telling me a few years ago who was like so confused. He's like, Abuna, what did I do wrong? Because he opened the door as they were leaving the building. He held the door open for his lab partner, who happens to be a woman, and she told him, I can open the door for myself. Okay, I'm sorry. and he would be rebuked because that would be like oppression. But anyway, go on in. Christophobia. This one kind of bugs me a little bit. If you notice that most of the shows that are portrayed lately, whenever there's somebody who's really spiritual or a strong Christian, how are they portrayed as? Big jerk, a thief who does something underhanded. Or if there's a clergy in any movie or show, they're usually portrayed as like these wicked, evil people. It's very subtle. People, unfortunately, at least here in this country, are equating a lot of Christians with like being judgmental, being intolerant, and it's just anything goes, and like freedom of religion and respect people's faiths and all that stuff, unless it's Christian. A person from another religion who works as a cashier in a grocery store and somebody's buying some bacon or some alcohol, and they go, sorry, manager, hey, Habibi, what's going on? I can't do this deal. Why? It's against my faith. Oh, it's okay, no problem. The manager does it. What do you think will happen if a Christian does this? See ya. Christophobia. Systematically desensitized to immorality. I was walking at an airport 3-4 years after I was ordained, and they have these TVs by the gates which usually show news, but one of the stations there was showing like a preview of some show, and it we're in church. It showed something very, very inappropriate related to some of the stuff we talked about earlier. Violence, gun permits and buying guns and buying ammunitions is at all time, all life high. People are buying a lot of these guns, and there's a lot of stabbings and killings and shootings, and I'm sure you're seeing that in the news all around you if you follow. A lot of hate. The love of money is indeed growing cold. And you'll notice a lot of that in the internet, and many of us in this church get sucked into it so easily. And we're like, I gotta respond, and I gotta say something, and I gotta do whatever, and engage in these useless arguments, as St. Paul called them. And we just add fire to fire, and return evil for evil, and we just get sucked into that whirlwind. Are you depressed yet? Malish. it's good that you know, whenever a person finds out that there's, you know, they have all these symptoms, they're distressed about it and they're sad and they don't like it. But this has become the condition of our world today. And I'm not just talking the U.S., it's all over the world. Okay, so that's symptoms. Let's jump into the causes. One of the most, if not the most, prominent causes for all this, this might surprise some of you, is fatherlessness. Fatherlessness. I'm not talking about children growing up in homes where the parents are divorced or the father is dead, but I'm talking about children who live in a house where there is a father living there, but they are still fatherless. There are too many kids who live with their dads in a fatherless house. Dads who grew up fatherless themselves, so they didn't have anybody to hand them down. What does it mean to be a Christian man? What does it mean to be a leader or a servant leader of a family? What does it look like and how you should live your life in society? Business and making money, which is worse than the pandemic, has become a very big thing. And the fathers believe the lie that, well, I'm doing this for my family. I beg to differ. You may think you are, but you're missing something way, way more important. And by the way, this is not just in the Middle East. For sure in the Middle East, because at least I'll speak for Egypt, after being immersed in another culture for 14 centuries, we get to pick up a few bad habits. Okay? And then the man is, that's it. The man, that means I'm the man. I said it, that settles it. My job is to make money and to make babies. After that, leave me alone. You know, mom is the one who raises the kids. Mom is the one who wakes them up to go to church. Mom is the one who asks them, what did you learn in Sunday school? Mom is doing everything. And the men have checked out. And then not only in the Middle East or in Egypt, but also in the West. And I blame this on the bad kind of the feminist movement. There are two feminist movements. One of them is very good and warranted and needs to be done. It's Christian. That women are equal in value, just different function, and we should honor them and revere them and treat them like human beings, which God's been telling us for thousands of years. But the other bad kind of feminism is anything he can do, she can do, only better. Men are scum, and my favorite, toxic masculinity. Where'd that come from? You serious? So naturally, what do men do? Men like kind of go back into their shell and they back up. If you look at TV shows, if you've been living in the U.S. for the last maybe 30, 40 years, way back when they would show shows like Leave It to Beaver or Cosby Show or Growing Pains, where they would show the husband, the dad, as somebody who's hardworking, has wisdom, guidance, disciplines with love and logic, and is somebody that supports his wife and the kids go to for guidance and so on. But then progressively, you see shows lately, like, not lately, but in the last 20 years, maybe 30 years, like The Simpsons or Everybody Loves Raymond or Two and a Half Men. I don't watch TV, but like I do research that the guys tell me, where they show the man as a big doofus, as one of the kids, as just absolutely clueless and just somebody who's in the way, and mom is the one who's doing all that stuff. And guess what? I mean, when the kids watch these shows growing up, they're like, it's not me, that's on the mom. And by the way, I don't blame the dads only. I blame a lot of the moms too, especially in our culture, because a lot of moms give love without wisdom. And they do everything for the boys. And the boys grow up to marry mom number two to take care of me. This is not wise. We don't want to raise dependent boys who are big with beards. We want to raise men who can lead. Fatherlessness. And of course, as a result, many men abdicated their stewardship. And we have fatherless now. fatherlessness. Another cause after fatherless is that superficial Christianity. Maybe I should have put that one number one. But we've become a people who, I don't know, we're missing it, y'all. We're missing it, even the Orthodox. Many of us, way too many of us, have reduced our Christianity to some spiritual practices at home or at church, and we think that we're good with God. There's no introspection. There's too many Christians who do not faithfully practice the sacraments of repentance and confession. It's an every once in a while thing, and it's kind of like I've taken something off the checklist, and there's no life application of the Christianity. We're not doing it. Too many Christians are not trying to improve, much less try to be perfect as their Father in heaven is perfect. We need to wake up. Another cause, I don't want to take too long, is hypocrisy. That's a favorite of mine. Too many Christians are living a double life. I'm talking angels on Sundays and demons on the rest of the week. I'm talking saintly, godly people on Sundays and carnal heathens the rest of the week. And we think we're okay. I don't know how, but we think we're okay. We really think we're fine as far as our relationship with God. Hypocrisy is a terrible thing. If you notice, if you ever read the Gospels, whenever it came to hypocrisy, I could almost picture the face of our Lord Jesus Christ bright red. The word choices he would choose and how it would really, like he hates hypocrisy because it really threatens our salvation. Hypocrisy hinders repentance because if it ain't broke, why fix it? I go to church, I know these hymns, I serve in Sunday school, I tithe, so I'm okay. And that's not Christianity. I have bad news for you. These are not our goal. These are means to our goal. We'll talk about that, about the treatment in a second. The number one reason why young people leave the faith is hypocrisy. You know, when the kids, mom tells them, don't lie. And then they're at church the next week and somebody says, oh, we missed you last Sunday. Where were you? She says, oh, we were out of town. Or we were very busy doing all this and all that, and they were just sleeping in. They think they have no idea the damage that they're teaching the kids to do. Anything we do in moderation, our kids will do in excess. The good news is that this is good or bad. Anything we do, good or bad, in moderation, our kids will do in excess. I saw this art here that I wanted to share with you. I thought it was very telling. It shows the mom, for those who can't see it, I don't know if it's big enough, but the mom is telling her daughter, okay, your 30 minutes is up, it's time to go do something useful. No problem, right? But then 2 hours later, the daughter comes to the mom and says, let's play, let's do something. You've been sitting like this for 2 hours on the phone. Hypocrisy. This applies to my kids, it doesn't apply to me. Kids, you did something bad, you should say sorry. I don't say sorry, I'm the dad. I'm the parent. Say sorry to you. Sorry, fa'inak. You know, that's hypocrisy. And that's what we're teaching the kids. Once you're old enough, no rules apply to you. No Christianity applies to you because you're old enough. You're your own God now. And this is mentioned a couple of times in the Synoptic Gospels that I truncated it just for space, but it says that in that day, on Judgment Day, many people come to the Lord and tell him, Lord, we ate and drank in your presence. That's communion. Not only that, but in your name, we healed sick people. We exorcised demons. I mean, we did miracles. Anyone here did miracles? Yeah? Okay. So these people didn't. By the way, I think miracles work mostly because of the faith of the recipient, not the person who's doing it. But anyway, and then the Lord tells them, no, depart away from me. You what? You liars? No, you didn't heal anybody. No, you didn't eat and drink in my presence. No. He said, depart away from me, you workers of iniquity. you who practice lawlessness. Yes, you went to church. Yes, you had communion. Yes, you did miracles. But you also did this and this and this. You made work out of iniquity. You made it. Now, we all do sins, but you made it a practice. You practiced lawlessness. Living that double life. Revelation 22:15. In case you're not sure, that's the very final chapter of the Bible. God is saying what? Outside where? Outside heaven. Or it mentions a few categories and it says, whoever loves and practices a lie. What is hypocrisy? A lie. My outside does not match my inside. Very simply put. Hypocrisy can cause loss of salvation. And I did want to mention this intentionally because I see a lot of this all over. In 1 Timothy 5:8 it says, but if anyone does not provide for his own and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. There are people out there who are fantastic servants at church, but they don't serve their family worth diddly. Not me, Bible. Denied the faith. Worse than an unbeliever. Okay, another cause. After hypocrisy, news and media. we can spend a lot of time on this. I'll just share with you some facts just to get you to see where it's coming from. Back in... up until 1980, if you've lived here in the U.S. long enough, there was usually the CBS half-hour news time with Walter Cronkite, where in 30 minutes, Walter Cronkite would tell you all the news that needed to be known in the world for that day. But in June 1980, the first 24/7 news station on TV started. So now that half-hour, you have 48 half-hour slots to fill, to get people to keep watching. And then shortly after that, in 96, well, not that shortly, but two more 24-hour news stations came on, and the rest is history. And they went from news reporting to news making. Because how are we going to get you to watch? How are we going to get you to stay on there with this channel so that they can, you know, keep selling ads, the root of all kinds of evil, the love of money, so that they can keep having ads to make more money and all that stuff. So now they got to get your attention. They got to keep you watching. I'll share with you something. It's kind of comical in a sad way. There's a website called allsides.com where it shows you on any news item what the left is saying, what the right is saying, and what the closer to center is saying. They're just different news sources. They're just sharing with you. And it's just humorous to see what each side is saying. Like, I'll give you an example. Although this I saw in 2012, the unemployment rate was 300,000. So one of those news channels is saying our economy is fantastic. In a country of, you know, 300 plus million people, there's only 300,000 people like looking for jobs. It's less than 1%. We're doing great. And then the other side, I don't remember which, but they said, this is an atrocity. How can this be acceptable? In the best country of the whole world, there's 300,000 Americans who cannot find work. Do you see what they're doing? Did they say there's 300,000 people looking for work or unemployed? Yes, who filed for unemployment. Maybe they're not looking for work, but they filed for unemployment. But then all the other icing and sweeteners and different propaganda, they do it. And we are like sheep being led to the slaughter. It's on our nature to have an affinity to the stations that kind of go along with how we think and stuff. So we tend to watch what we want. And then here comes the pitiful fart. Part where people, because some people watch this one, some people watch that one, and then they start fighting together. You're wrong, you don't know what you're talking about, and then we start going at each other, and they're just happy because people are watching more and more and more, and they keep exaggerating so that people can keep watching so they can make more money. And then the internet tsunami soon after, 96. There are people who do get master's degrees and PhDs whose sole function on earth is to keep you on your device. There are two industries in the world that call their customers users. One is technology, and the other one is drug dealers. They call them users. Think about that one for a minute. All right. It just keeps on going on and on. These are certain causes. Remember, if we waste our time treating the symptoms, we're going to be spinning our wheels. It's not going to be any good. We need to be treating the causes. Passivity. If I were to ask you, what was Adam's first sin? Most people will say, eating from the forbidden fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. No. There's another sin he did before that, which is this, being passive. He was right there next to Eve when she gave him the fruit, right? And he just watched the whole conversation with the serpent, and he didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. I wish he did something. Passivity, it's another big cause. That we're living in a world where we are so consumed with ourselves, we're so desensitized, we're so selfish, and people don't have mercy anymore. People can be walking on the street, seeing somebody getting beat up and not do anything. No, I take it back. They'll take out their phone and take a video so that they can post it somewhere and get a million likes or whatever. Okay, now that we are depressed enough, let's start looking at the treatment plan. And again, I'm not going to pretend to have the answers, but I just wanted to wake us up a little bit so that we can begin to realize what's happening in this world. That's another one. Growth and increase of evil in quantity and quality and variety. All right, let's look at the treatment plan. The treatment plan is one item, which is to recommit to Christ. Recommit your love to Christ for real. One of the things that we teach in the premarital program is that for the couples, they need to look at the marriage relationship as a live being, as their firstborn child. That this live being needs to be nourished, needs to be fed, needs to be educated, needs to be cleansed and washed. If it's sick, it needs to be taken to the doctor again and again and again. It's a live being, and if you neglect this live being, it shrivels up. And unfortunately, a lot of couples, because of life, because of busyness, because of whatever, they get to this place where they're just disconnected. Okay. With all these different symptoms and causes I'm talking about, they get us really, really distracted and disconnected from God. And we need to renew our vows, if you will. Like some of those couples, they need to renew our vows. We need to go back to remembering our first love. We need to renew the excitement and the passion and the joy that when you see a newly baptized convert has. We need to make our Christianity real again. I'm going to talk about just 3 points real quick, and then we'll close. Sorry, tawilt alaikum. Now, let's talk, that's the what, okay? Recommit yourself to Christ. I don't have a big wow moment for you. That's what we need to do, because he's the source of all things. And I'm talking about living the life he wants me to live, not just doing things for show. The treatment plan and the how is basically the regarding the points that we've mentioned and the causes. First of all, genuine, practical Christianity. We need to work on slowing down. I was so happy when I came across this picture here, where somebody is on a sailboat whale watching, and a whale came up out of the water right next to his boat. He could touch it, but he missed it all because he's on his device. We need to realize what this thing is. It is a tool. It can be useful, but it's a very dangerous, very sharp, double-edged sword. We need to know it for what it is and not let it steal us. Introspection. We need to slow down so that we can take a look at me. People are terrified of silence. Have you noticed that? They get in the car, they turn something on, they go home, they turn something on, they If they're standing in the cashier line for just a minute, alatul, everybody pulls it out. We can't stand the silence. Although it's in our silence and it's in our solitude and it's in our quietness where our strength is and our rejuvenation, Isaiah 30:15. We need to know your identity, your purpose, your role. You need to go back and find out why you are here. Why did God create you? What does God have in store for you? People who don't know what their purpose is are lost. They're just doing this, the stuff that we're talking about. We need to know our role and where we're heading and what we are supposed to do. Application. As a result of slowing down and introspection and examining myself, and I thank God that He does not show us everything wrong in us all at the same time, because we would collapse when we see our own ugliness. But out of His grace, He shows us what we need to work on one thing at a time. Take that. Okay, spend a week on it, spend a month on it, focus on it, don't worry about all the other stuff. Target that, pray about it, see if there's verses about it, like, have a purpose, have something to work on, so that you can be living out your Christianity. We want to live out our Christianity in here, not just the church, in our mind. Because if it's in here, I will apply it when I'm driving, when I'm at the store, when I'm at work, when I'm studying, when I'm taking a test, when I'm filing my taxes, when I'm dealing with my family. We need to make our Christianity real, and we need to start bearing fruit. I'm going to hurry. Proverbs 23:26. God is saying, my child, give me your heart and let your eyes delight in my ways. We've given our heart to, we're kind of cheating on God. You know, He calls Himself the bridegroom and we are the bride, and we have chosen a lot of other things that we have given our heart to. We need to give Him our heart. Okay. It is time that we make our Christianity real. That's the first thing, is general practical Christianity. The second thing is rebuilding Christian men and masculinity again. Over 30 years ago when I was at A&M, I used to listen to country music, and there was a song that was titled, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? It's very rare to come by a good man these days who knows who he is, who knows what his purpose on earth is, who knows what it means to lead, who has true strength. I mean, what makes a hero is that they're not afraid, they're fearless. No. What makes a hero is that even when they are afraid, they still do the right thing. Even when it is uncomfortable, they do it because it is the right thing. That's what courage is. Courage is not fearlessness. Courage is doing the right thing even when I'm afraid. We're human. We will be afraid. Rebuilding Christian masculinity. Like I told you, like we're just scratching the surface. Each one of those needs a talk so that we can, but we just need to roll up our sleeves and begin to work on it. Confession. Beginning to heal old wounds and lies that we have believed about what a man is. Teaching and correcting wrong understandings. Vulnerability. A lot of men think that vulnerability is weakness, that vulnerability is feminine, which is a lie. A lot of men are so lonely and so isolated because they feel like they can't share with anybody because all my buddies are going to think I'm a wuss, which is a lie. We need to have accountability because two are better than one. And on our own, we were not going to be able to make it. The last treatment on the how is proactivity and intentionality. Yes, let us learn from all these evil people that started out all these agendas from in the last several decades. Let's learn something from them, sitting down and being intentional and making a plan and following those goals and thinking ahead and to take action with just small steps, but do it consistently. I'm gonna stop here because I know I'm taking too long. But again, I want you to think of the concept of diagnosis, what the symptoms are, the causes are, the treatment plan for the causes, not for the symptoms, the what and the how. And hopefully as we begin to work on this, we will be able to I'm not going to say we're going to stop the progression. I'm going to say maybe to slow down the progression of the disease, because per the Bible, it only gets worse from here. And maybe at best, we can begin to work hard. And I realize to think, it's overwhelming to think, how am I going to affect the whole world? What am I going to do to all these countries and nations? I mean, who am I against Satan? Don't worry about all that stuff. Just start with you. Start with your inner circle. Start with yourself as an individual and with your family and your circles of influence. And if each one of us does this, I know this sounds cliche-ish, but it's true. We have been so quiet and so passive for long enough. We need to do something and at least work on ourselves and teach our kids how to be heroes, how to be Christian people who have a real, enduring Christian, personal, intimate, real relationship with God. May God help us all to be people who are wise and shrewd and intentional in everything we do. And glory be to God forever and ever. Amen.